Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am joined by Bo, also known as BB Dade, also known as History Bro. And I'm Josh. And we're here for part two of What Makes Good Art. And we're picking up where we left off with pop art, which is big in the 1950s and 60s. But first and foremost, I think it's important to summarise what we actually talked about last time. So what we kind of settled on, I know you're a big advocate of what makes good art being the skill of the artist involved. And I'm not misrepresenting you there. I don't think, am I?
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, that's part of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not all of it, of course, but that's part of it. If the piece of art looks like it was knocked up with no skill in no time, mm-hmm. then its value, its intrinsic value to me is less. But that's not the whole story, is it? There's much more to it than that. But there is a big section.
Mm-hmm. There is, of course, the view that you can look at art purely in the sort of with the view that it's the emotions evoked that is of value. If it evokes strong emotions, then it's a good piece of art. If it evokes nothing, then it's not a very good piece of art. Or if it evokes hatred and frustration, then it's probably deliberately annoying or
I said that on the last one briefly, didn't I? That it's that it makes you feel something. It doesn't necessarily have to be positive or good. I mean, that's probably better, isn't it? But it doesn't have to be that at all. If it makes you think or feel nothing, then again, it's difficult to argue that that its value is less then. Mm-hmm. So that's a big
And of
part
course
of it
there
as
is
well.
There is space for a certain amount of subjective taste as well, isn't there? In that it could be a good piece of art, but how much people enjoy it depends on how much it is to their taste.
And of course, the word value is very, very difficult to pin down. We're not just talking about the monetary value at auction. Valuable it is to you as a piece of art, you know, if you value it.
There are lots of pieces of art out there that are really quite something that are probably not worth nearly as much as some pieces of art which I would look down upon, more or less. Mm. And talking of art that I'd look down upon, let's have a look at this this piece of art by Roy Lichtenstein from 1963 called Wham. And it looks like an extract from a comic book, as you can probably deduce all on your own.
Well, I mean, it is, isn't it? That's what pop art is. I mean, it's quite literally that, isn't it? I think.
Yeah.
Blown up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's got more going on than a lot of the contemporary art we were talking about before. There's at least something. It's not trying too hard to be something it's not. It's just, here's an extract from a comic book that I think looks cool, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That's what I imagine the artist is saying. I'm sure they're not going to be like, yes, this represents the most profound aspect of our civilization. I think that would be very difficult to get out of it when you're basically deifying a kid's comic book. Mm. I think that no matter how pretentious you are, that's probably not going to be lost on you.
Yeah. I mean, people that enjoy that or think that's of great value, they've bought Lichtenstein's lie. It's probably a bit harsh to call it a liar, but his angle that this is good art, they've bought that. Mm-hmm. They've been duped by that. I don't know if Roy Lichtenstein believes it himself. Probably does, almost certainly does. That was something I wanted to say about following on from the last one, where we were saying that if you sort of take a lot of modern art, conceptual sort of stuff seriously, you've sort of fallen for the trick, the sort of the 100-year-old trick that's being played on you. Mm-hmm. And I think that what's more, even more pathetic and insane is that the artists themselves
buy into it,
fooled by it. That someone like Lichtenstein probably thinks that that piece of art is, you know, of great intrinsic value. That is, you know, has great artistic value. When of course it doesn't.
Yeah,
it's not even actually good art. You know, when you a good sort of drawing, if you like. I mean, it's not bad, is it? It's better than I could do.
Yeah, it's certainly better than
when
I could
you
do.
When you like comics and you're into comics and you know some of the different artists. Mm-hmm. One I was most into sort of 2000 AD when I was a younger man and a teenager. I liked 2000 AD, and there were some more famous artists than others and some that were better than others. And that is just bog standard. That sort of aesthetic in comic books is bog standard. It's nothing special at all. I mean, I suspect Liechtenstein knew that and has deliberately chosen that. Have you ever seen other sort of examples of pop art up close?
I think so.
When
yeah.
it's like that style of where it's like dots.
It's yeah.
hard to explain. There's a proper word for it, which I can't remember, but lots and lots of dots that make up the image.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's originally for sort of higher volume printing of comic books. So it's like really quick and you use the minimal amount of ink and things.
Yeah, it's more for the machine's benefit than a deliberate choice of art
right,
style.
Right. Whereas someone like Liechtenstein in the 60s or whatever, thinking of maybe Andy Warhol type stuff as well. But just that thing that will take this sort of low resolution, sort of undeniably kind of crappy art, and we'll blow it up and say it's good. Well, okay, if you want to buy into that, if you don't want to question any of that, then feel free, but I shall.
You might want to reserve some of your distaste, because this next one's probably even more egregious than the last. This is it. This is Love by Robert Indiana from 1967. And I mean, you can see just by the year, so-called Summer of Love was 1967, wasn't it?
Wasn't it 69, Summer of Love?
It might be. I thought it was 67. I'll Google it. But yes, there's not really a lot going on there. It looks like a sort of band's EP cover, doesn't it?
Well, it's just lazy, isn't it? It's sort of beyond lazy, in my opinion. I've seen a woodcut of that. You can see all sorts of versions of that, can't you? But
says on Wikipedia 1967, and of course, Wikipedia cannot be wrong.
I thought it was Woodstock 69, but okay.
No, that is an important day, though, isn't it?
All right, yeah. So this, I mean, it's... Do you know what I think? It's an artist in their garret struggling. And they're just like, what can I do to try and make money, to try and not be lost to history, to try and be somebody? What can I do? What sort of nonsense and lies can I spiel out about my own work to make it more valuable, to try and dupe people, art critics and people that buy art and people that own art galleries? That's all it is in my mind.
I mean,
This
is one of the cases where it's not even impressive when you look at it, but as you look at it, it gets worse and worse, because there's not really, there's not really rhyme or reason to it. It's just the word love really, really blown up with some colours in the middle. And I mean, this weird deification of love in the late 60s, as if it's the only important emotion, is kind of a weird, it's kind of casting off all of the other complex emotions that are just as significant to human life, and putting love on a pedestal is actually not a good thing, objectively speaking. Like, I mean, it's just going to be setting yourself up for disaster. And I think that, I mean, there was, of course, the Beatles song All You Need Is Love, which was probably on the radio at this time, but I think it's a terrible notion. I mean, it's important, sure, but there are other things as well. I mean, you need responsibility, you need determination.
Yeah.
I don't think you only need love. I think that you're not going to get a lot done.
Yeah, dedication is what you need. I always thought, even as a child, even when I sort of couldn't really articulate any of this, I still always thought of sort of the beatnik or the hippie generation that was obsessed with not going to work and taking drugs and being really into the concept of love at the expense of nearly everything else. Even as a child, I thought, well, that's nonsense. That's a dead end.
It's very monodimensional.
Didn't have the words then, but even then, it was like, well, like, what is that? I mean, feel free to go and live in a commune higher all your life until at some point you realised you've wasted your time.
Of the communes actually dissolved because it wasn't possible to live like that. Eventually, hierarchies formed and they all collapsed. So,
well, when there's no authority, then you only need one or two bad eggs.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
And then the whole thing falls apart. I mean, look at the Chaz or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And the counterculture in sort of the late 60s, sort of Kennedy was murdered in front of everyone, and then LBJ kicks off this giant war. And so there's a counter kickback to that, sort of this endless obsession with love and peace and things. like I say, at the expense of nearly everything else, at the expense of reason almost.
Yeah, I know. And it's a shame because a lot of the music coming out from this time is some of my favourite music going. So it's a shame that it's got to be laden with this very flawed view of humanity, really.
I mean, it's all right. It could be worse. It's just childish to me.
Just breaking everything down into one factor, it's just such a low resolution image of life that you're basically boiling it down to meaninglessness, which is exactly the problem with this, really. Like, so, I mean, you could have done lots of other important emotions along with it as a series. It would have at least been a bit more meaningful than just this on its own. But there we go. It's, as you said, a bit lazy.
Yeah.
So moving on to something that I enjoy a little bit more is op art, which was popular between the 1950s and 60s. And the idea of this isn't necessarily the same as conventional art. It's that it's trying to create optical illusions that plays on your visual perception. And as a psychologist, I have seen many of these that tell you lots of interesting things about visual perception that you wouldn't otherwise be able to learn. And I feel like I'm going to probably have a more niche appreciation of these images than most other people, because I know how they can be used and what they actually can tell you about human perception. So, for example, here you can see that you can't really... It looks like there's a 3D image here, even though it's 2D, when, particularly when you look in the middle of the image. Do you kind of get that?
Yeah, the illusion of depth, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if we move on, this one is Bridget Riley's Current, 1964. But if we move on to this next one, it's again playing with depth in 2D spaces, and it's using... here in particular, it's easier to break down what's going on because it's using the squares here to give the illusion of depth, because your eyes are used to seeing 3D images and therefore your brain perceives it that way. And there are lots of other ones, but these are just the two I picked out. And it can actually tell you something about yourself and your visual perception, how it can be tricked. And of course, the ultimate thing would be that your perception, your senses can't always be trusted to evaluate what you're looking at, which is actually quite an important lesson. And maybe I'm reading a bit too much into this because I'm looking at it as a psychologist rather than an artist. And I think probably a psychologist has got a lot more to say about this sort of thing than an artist would. They'd be reading into it and talking about how, I don't know, it distorts reality and how it means that everything's subjective, when in reality it's just showing that there are flaws in how our brain programs information.
Yeah, when I was a child, I had a book of optical illusions, sort of picture book of optical illusions, and I sort of exhausted that by the time I was about 10 years old. So that's all this is. I mean, you can put it in an art gallery if you want. But I mean, I do appreciate that my view is like sort of hypercritical about all sorts of things. Like, for example, I just dismissed most rap. Mm-hmm. You know, like being able to rhyme is for 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds. I don't put any store, I don't hardly any value in the ability to rhyme some words. I feel the same about this. I mean, yes, it is art. You can call it art, of course. And you can say it's better or worse than something else. I mean, it's an optical illusion. Yeah, you can fool the eye and the brain into misunderstanding 2D and 3D and all that sort of thing. Those magic eye stuff. Yeah, it's really interesting. But that's
I think it's one of those things that if it were created as a resource for psychology experiments, it'd be a bit more useful than if it were art, to be honest. Because there are lots of interesting things you can do with optical illusions. Like one of the experiments I did while I was at university was... Not sure if you're, I think it was the Muller Lyer illusion, where it's a duck and a rabbit image.
It's a famous one. Yeah.
And what that can be used is to investigate binocular rivalry, because your perception switches because you've got two eyes and your brain's got to create one image in your head. Yeah. Obviously, depending on where your eyes are positioned, depends on whether you see the duck or the rabbit. So if you do that, you get less, if you've got one eye closed, then you'll have less switches between the two than if you have both eyes open. And you can design an experiment to basically measure how much people's attention flips in certain circumstances. So there was an interesting experiment where they looked at retreatist Buddhist monks who basically practice focus, attention, meditation, which is a branch of meditation, which obviously focuses on focusing your attention. Surprise, surprise. And they found consistently that sometimes they could look at the image for about 30 seconds and it wouldn't switch if for the more senior retreatist monks, like ones who had been away for about 20 years, whereas for your ordinary person...
Because their mind is set in some way.
Yeah, because they've practiced focusing their attention to such a degree that it doesn't flip nearly as much, whereas the average person...
That's very interesting.
It flips about once every 1 or 2 seconds. So that's quite a significant difference, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It's like you could say they've got a different brain chemistry, right? By that.
Well, yes, of course. But it's fascinating that you can use these images for that sort of thing, which is probably why I enjoy these a little bit more than you do, because I know what they can be used for. Although, as art, as I said before, they're probably not as useful as stimuli for psychology experiments.
Flick through a book of optical illusions. It's fine. I'm just not going to call it good art. For example, this plays with the idea of, as we say, sort of perspective and the illusion of depth. What I find fascinating is in the ancient world or the early Renaissance, when they're doing that sort of for the first time or rediscovering it for the first time, you get some pictures by, I don't know, people like Giotto or maybe early Raphaels and things, where they've sort of, it's actually rediscovered the concept of a vanishing point and perspective. And they're obviously sort of playing with it, drawing cityscapes in order to play with this sort of newly rediscovered concept of sort of depth and creating the illusion of a 3D thing on a 2D plane. So when it's done in sort of the 13th or 14th century, it's much more impressive to me than that, which... I don't know. Is it computer generated? I don't know what that is. Anyway, it's.
I think it was. This was Victor Vassarelli, 1969.
Okay, so not computer generated, but nonetheless, I mean, would you need a ruler and maybe a compass or something? I don't know exactly what you need. All the intellectual work has been done for you. Someone else taught him how to create images like that. I suspect. I doubt he...
I'd be surprised if they didn't.
Yeah, yeah, right. So he's done no real work of his own, no real discoveries or actually toiled away to find something new or do something new or innovative. But again, that's just how I feel. Just my opinion. Take it or leave it.
Well, someone who we will both agree... in this next one, which is under abstract expressionism, big in the 40s and 50s. This is, of course, Mark Rothko. And I think we both agree that this is derivative nonsense. This is Untitled 1959. I'm sure it'd make a compelling kids' book cover, but beyond that, I think artistic value is pretty limited. It's just, oh, there's four colours there, great. What am I meant to get out of this?
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, Rothko is one of the biggest charlatans ever to have walked the earth.
I'll definitely agree with that.
He was one of the most miserable humans ever and then killed himself.
To be fair, I'd kill myself too if I made art like that.
And I just think this is extremely harsh. His entire life was less than worthless. It was like it was a detriment to civilization. He came over to America as an immigrant at New York, you know, the classic thing, classic early 20th century thing, and hated it, never got on with it, and just hated it, just felt alienated in America, New York, badly. Tried to be an artist, was terrible at art, was a terrible draftsman, way worse than like Picasso or someone, just wasn't good at drawing or art or anything, terrible. And struggled to make it, and no one was interested in his childish nonsense, childish attempts to do actual paintings. So, like most artists that aren't very good, resorted to this sort of thing, and with the spiel, the sort of the
art English,
the sort of the nonsense justifications that go with it, and lots of people bought that lyre, bought into his thing, to the point where these go for silly money, don't they?
Tens
of millions.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely absurd. And he talks about, you know, the justification for it is things about like alienation and loneliness and all that thing. Well, he had just a problem with the West and capitalism, of course. Of course, these disaffected losers always do. And I just don't buy any of it. It's just, again, the Emperor's New Clothes thing.
I don't know how he could have a problem with capitalism if this sold for, you know, tens of millions.
It doesn't make any difference, does it? Like, AOC can wear
a
very expensive dress that says tax the rich on it. I'm like, aren't you the rich now, though? Mm. I mean, what are you... Yeah, it doesn't matter that it's that they're being hypocritical. I kind of feel sorry for people that buy the Rothko story, that buy into it. I feel like they're... When I meet people that buy into it, I do think that I pity them in a way, because I feel like you've still got the mind of a child in some senses. Like you haven't actually questioned it for yourself, clearly. I don't think you have. Or if you have and you've come to that conclusion, then what are you? You are actually like terribly confused or something, all those sorts of things. But you get it, even, you know, famous art critics buy into it. Yeah, and people that know about art, have studied art and art history their whole life, will still buy into it. And it's unbelievable to me. It's like a physicist that's also a devout Hindu or Christian. It's like, how the cognitive dissonance not destroying your mind right now? But okay, all right.
I think the only thing that could possibly be interpreted is perhaps use of colour. But then that's such a low bar that, you know, maybe there's some conventional wisdom that you don't pair these colours together and there's some sort of dissonance created. But to someone who doesn't create art, there's not really a lot there, is there?
No, it's almost like gaslighting. It's almost like he's daring you to call him out on it. Mm-hmm. Although I don't think that was the case in his mind. I'm just saying that now. I think he probably bought into the whole thing as well.
Do you think it's somewhat like what happens in music when the artist kills themselves? All of a sudden, there's massive amounts of interest in what they created. I can certainly see that here.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.